Hello.
Hello, and welcome to the ADHD Science Podcast.
I am Tess Davey, and I'm here with Max Davey.
And I'm Max Davey, and I'm here with Tess Davey.
Well, isn't that wonderful?
Isn't that a coincidence?
Yeah, we realised that we've forgotten to start the episodes off by introducing ourselves, so that's who we are.
Yes.
In case there was any question about that.
Why do we have the same name, Tess?
What? You know, I never realised that. This is my dad. So today we are here with...
Giacomo Grassi.
Yes, I didn't want to risk saying it in case I was wrong. Okay, this is one of, like, my favourite episodes that we've recorded. I had a really good time. He's got some really interesting stuff to say. So stay tuned for that.
Yes, we're going to talk about hoarding, which is such an interesting topic. And... Mm-hmm. Something that I've always associated with other conditions other than ADHD, but Giacomo really makes a really good case that it's a very, very important part of ADHD and very closely aligned to ADHD, and that we should maybe think differently about it.
Come on, no spoilers.
Well, I think, in a way, okay. That's what they say. Tell people what you're going to say, say it, and then tell people what you've said, because...
Well, stay tuned to the outro. We're going to recap what you just heard us say.
It's possible. All right.
Enjoy.
On with the interview. Right. Welcome. Here we are with Giacomo Grassi from the Brain Center for ENSI. Welcome, Giacomo. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you, Max.
Now, this paper, but just to give you a spoiler, this is one of those papers when I read through the little Google alert I get for ADHD, sometimes I read through the abstracts and I'm like, yeah, I kind of knew that. This is one of those papers when I'm like, I did not see that coming. So I'm really excited to meet you, but also to talk about your specific paper today on hoarding. So do you want to
get started, Tess? So in your research, what question were you answering?
Our recent start with... The idea, I mean, the first question was, is it really hoarding so frequent in OCD patients? Because actually, as I work as a clinician mainly, and I see both OCD patient and ADHD patient, and since many years, the impression was that hoarding disorder was a really common comorbidity in ADHD people more than in OCD people. So that was the first question. Is it really so frequent in OCD people respect to ADHD people? And we noticed that there was not studies in the literature directly comparing this comorbidity on ADHD and OCD population. And actually, maybe I can spend a few words on
about... Just to come back. So we've got a comparison of the ADHD population, the OCD population, yeah. And hoarding.
Yeah.
We probably don't need to define for our audience ADHD now, but it's worth just... Mm-hmm. This OCD is one of those conditions where there's such misunderstanding about what it is. And there's, I don't know if it's something you come across.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit OCD, which is one of the most annoying things that people say related to mental health ever. And then there's what hoarding actually is, because I think hoarding is another one of those things. Well, I'm a bit of a hoarder. What you mean when you say those things would be really helpful.
It makes sense to clarify the things. Yes, about OCD, old people said, I'm a bit obsessed. But usually they refer to OCPD, obsessive compulsive personality. Okay. That it's that kind of, you are a bit rigid, you like symmetry, things in a certain way, things could be just right. But having OCD, it's a different stuff. Having OCD, it's having obsession. So thoughts that are distressing in some way. Thoughts that are not controlled, that make you anxious, that cause you distress. And then you have compulsion. So compulsion are everything you can do, could be an act or could be a mental and other thoughts, to decrease the anxiety or the distress of the obsession. So having OCD, it's having obsession and compulsion.
And the thing that I think is crucial is that it's not that it's external, like it's coming in from, but it almost feels external to yourself. It's an unwelcome addition to your own psychology. It's not something that's comforting to do these things. It's something that's distressing and unpleasant to do these things.
Sure. But imagine the classical example. Now, if I have the doubt, did I close the door? Okay. It's a normal thought. But imagine that after you check, you again, you have this thought and you know that you closed, already closed, but you have a lot of anxiety and you have to check again. Okay, this is really obsession and compulsion. And having a bit of obsession and compulsion, actually, it's not a disorder. I think 1/3 of the worldwide people have obsession and compulsion. We all have obsession and compulsion. And probably it's something also that helped our evolution. But if you have it, if you have too much of them, if you have many of them in time of time consuming and many and all these thoughts compromise your daily life, you can speak about disorder. So having sometimes some obsession and compulsion, it's not a disorder. So usually many people could experience this. But it's another stuff from the people saying, okay, I'm a manic of ordering, I'm a manic of the clean of this. When people speak like this, it's another stuff.
It's another example.
It's not it's another hoarding. Stuff. And hoarding, again, hoarding, it's something really different from people making, for example, collection or don't like to take many things, to have many things in their house. Hoarding is something related to the difficulties in discarding objects and things. That's really the core of hoarding disorder. That also, most people with hoarding, what we call hoarding disorder, also have excessive acquisition. So are people that usually take a lot of stuff and they have difficulty in discarding. Right. But not all. I mean, it's not mandatory. Even in a DSM-5, excessive acquisition, it's like a specifier. It's not a core symptom of the diagnosis. Really, the core is difficulties in discarding, and the result should be that you have problem in your house because all the things that you're not able to discard accumulate in your house and clutter your living space. So again, in that context, it became a disorder. So people that really, the hoarding, I mean, I think there is a popular show in Italy. It's, I don't know, it's, Barrett. I don't know if you have in the UK a TV show about hoarding people.
We do, and I can't, to be honest, I can't remember what it's called.
I don't know, I don't think
I don't know the English title. Anyway.
I don't know about that, but I know that there's a lot of content on social media of like people cleaning others' houses
And again, the stereotype are of extreme hoarding disorder, but actually hoarding disorder, it's something, I mean, really quite, I mean, that it's not so stereotyped. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, but the thing is, not having difficulty getting rid of things that you like, because you bought them because you like them, presumably, and having having difficulties getting rid of stuff that you like is to an extent normal. I mean, a very typical kind of behavior. So where do we draw the line? Where do we say this is a problem?
That's really a good point, because really the border is that you have difficulties in discarding independently of the value. Okay, it could be something that has like an economic value, an emotional value, or no value. The problem is that you have difficulties in discarding everything. And of course, for the things that have an economic value, it's much difficult. For the things that have affective behaviors, it's much difficult. But the problem is that hoarding people have difficulties in making decisions and balancing their decisions. So I have maybe I cannot choose anymore the kitchen because it's full of stuff. I have to discard things that maybe have an economic value, but I'm not able to do it. So I don't choose the kitchen and I hoard it with like restaurant delivery stuff because my kitchen is full of stuff and I'm not discard them. It's this kind of difficulties. And that's why actually, and we will see, and that was the idea of the paper and the literature in this field, that decision-making, executive function and attention are really core aspects of hoarding disorder. And that's why probably the link with ADHD. But in the beginning, hoarding disorder, I mean, hoarding disorder, it's a quite new diagnosis in the nosography, international nosography. It was the 2013 when the DSM-5 came out that hoarding was finally became a separate disorder. Before that date, it was just considered a subtype of OCD.
Yes. So that's the thing that we need to make clear to listeners, is that both in the popular imagination and also in medical diagnosis, and you use the word nosography, which is essentially classification of conditions and classifications of symptoms. But it, both in the popular imagination and also in medical classification, hoarding and OCD were closely related.
At the beginning, they were the same things. I mean, having hoarding was like subtype of symptom of OCD, because if you have OCD, you can have different kind of symptoms. You can have doubts, and then you can check. You can have fear of get infected and wash. And you can have also obsession about, if I discard things, if I throw away these things, something bad could happen. And this is like what we call a hoarding symptoms in OCD. But then, in the clinical trial for OCD, a clear fact came out that patients with OCD and what we call at that time hoarding did not respond well to the medication that usually works in OCD patient. So hoarding disorder became, over the decades, from the early 2000s, a subtype of OCD that was considered really a resistant subtype. That's why some researchers start studying it as a separate disorder, making the hypothesis, maybe it's something different. We are calling OCD something that is not. And that's why we arrived in 2013 to the idea that hoarding disorder is something different. And today you could have OCD with hoarding symptoms. And in that case, you have obsession about hoarding. So you have thoughts that make you anxious about things you acquired or you have to discard, and then compulsion. And then you could have hoarding, that is a different stuff, in which you don't have obsession, you don't have compulsion, and you have the hoarding criteria, so the difficulties in discarding things that result in clutter in your house. So that is the picture today. And that's why hoarding disorder has been considered in the OCD spectrum. If you look to the DSM-5 and the ICD, hoarding disorder, it's still considered something in the OCD spectrum. My paper, it's the last of a series. I didn't discover anything. As usually research, you never discover anything. Fine. Something exploded. But I just systemized the idea. I did the right paper at the right time, taking all the knowledge we already have. No, because other researcher before me start noticing that even in hoarding patient, in patient with primary hoarding disorder, ADHD was very common, was a very common comorbidity. So the studies were on patient with a primary diagnosis of hoarding disorder. And looking to their childhood, this researcher noticed that they had really a high degree of ADHD, and specifically the more attentional ADHD. So people with a story of more problematic attentional symptoms. And this is quite consistent across several studies. And this makes sense because hoarding disorder, neuropsychological studies of hoarding disorder show that hoarding people have problem with attention and executive function that we know are core aspects of ADHD. And take in mind, the problem of hoarding people is, for example, if I have to organize all the clutter I have and to decide what to discard, I have to use many executive functions. Executive functions are the functions like organization, planning, visual spatial organization, decision making, impulsivity. All these functions are used when I have, for example, to say, okay, today it's Sunday, I want to order my house, I have to discard many things and to throw away many newspapers I didn't read and never read. I have to use this function. So that was the link on a neuropsychological perspective. And then we had the data that hoarding patients had a lot of comorbidity with ADHD. What was interesting, there was like a few studies investigating hoarding disorder in patients with ADHD. But clinically, it's something that I spent many years and I'm still doing research on the OCD spectrum. So for me, it was quite common to ask to ADHD patient that I see every day, Do you have how is your house? I mean, how is your roof? Okay. And the average answer is it's a chaos. Okay, it's a lot of stuff. And always the idea is that because I don't mind. I don't have gratification reward if I order things. So I don't mind that I leave it here. But then we notice that there are many patients that are something more than this. So many patients saying, even when I try to order things, I struggle because I have difficulties in discarding. And so the idea was, we did the first study actually, and before I start working with the Brain Center Firenze in my previous affiliation, we did a preclinical and clinical studies. So the idea was, let's try to treat ordering patients with medication that are used for ADHD, starting mm-hmm. from that, okay? And we published a paper, was, I think, 2015 or 16, on Journal of Psychiatry Research, the same journal where we published this paper now. And we did a preclinical studies trying atomoxetine, that is a non-stimulant agent for ADHD. And that time was like the most commonly used in Italy for adults, because in Italy for treating ADHD with medication, it's very complicated. Okay, we have just methylphenidate. At that time, we have methylphenidate and atomoxetine. So we try atomoxetine in patients with hoarding disorder and in a preclinical model, a mouse model of compulsivity. That is the Marmol-Behring test. It's, I don't go deep on that, but we don't mind about that. But we, in a small sample, I think there was like 11 patients, something like that. Now I don't remember exactly, but we have like a good response on hoarding symptoms using.
So just to go back, you found that treating people with hoarding disorder who don't necessarily have a formal diagnosis of ADHD, but treating them with ADHD type medication kind of works.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like really preliminary and really on a small sample people followed. So it was like a pilot study. But that was something that corroborated the idea, support the idea that probably attention, executive function, hoarding, ADHD, there is a link probably. Then another study, I think 2 years ago, came out about a group by Maureen Zamir, that it's another researcher really involved in the field, that show like 22%, I think, of prevalence of hoarding disorder comorbidity in a sample of patients with ADHD. Okay. And that was another big data because it's a lot. Take in mind that hoarding disorder in the general population, it's something around probably 2.5%. So having 22% in ADHD population, it's a lot. It means that something is going there in that field. So what we did with our research was a very simple thing. So we see OCD people, we see ADHD people, we have samples of healthy control that we use for doing research, and we put together these three samples. Adult patient with a primary diagnosis of ADHD, adult patient with a primary diagnosis of OCD, and healthy controls. And what we did, we assessed hoarding disorder across these three groups. And what we found is that hoarding disorder, it's much more common in ADHD people than in OCD and healthy controls. What if we think, if we consider the diagnosis, the formal diagnosis, but if we look just to symptoms, so even having subthreshold symptom of hoarding disorder, it's something much common in ADHD people than in OCD. And it's something much common, like 32% of comorbidity in ADHD, 8%, in OCD and 4% in healthy control. So something different.
Wow.
Yes, that was a wow moment.
That is wow.
So, you've given such a lucid exposition of your work, we haven't really had a chance to kind of jump in. What's your reaction to that, Tess?
I just told you, wow.
Wow, apart from...
I don't know what to say. You put me on the spot here, but I guess my thought process is that it kind of feels like something that is like has been sitting there waiting to be found out about for so long.
Yeah. And lots of people with ADHD thinking, oh, have I got OCD as well because I have difficulty with this, or I'm, you know, I've got this difficulty with hoarding. Whereas actually, it's just part of their, with just a part of their ADHD in a sense. Go on.
Do you find that a lot of women, because I know women have quite a difficult time getting diagnosed with ADHD. Mm. Do you find that they tend to be more diagnosed with hoarding? So the people who were diagnosed with hoarding but not ADHD, do you find that that was more women than men? Because I was just thinking that.
It's a great question.
It's a great question because, of course, there will be something different between them probably. Actually, in our study, there was, I mean, in general, we see much female than male. And that's I mean, in adults, because the population in which we found this, it's a special population of ADHD people. So it's adults that received in their adulthood for the first time the diagnosis of ADHD. Yeah. Okay, so that in Italy, it's a very common population because since there is not such a big culture about ADHD since the last years, many people has not been diagnosed during the childhood or otherwise. So we are an adult clinic and we see this kind of patient. And the most common phenotype, it's really female, young female with anxiety comorbidity that spent many years in psychotherapy and doing other treatment. And in the end, we diagnosed ADHD that was the starting point of their trajectory. So we see a lot of hoarding in female, and we see less male that are less likely to report this hoarding problem in general and to report problem in general. But we still don't have data about if there is statistical difference.
Just going to ask an ignorant question, not knowing anything about hoarding disorder, really. What is the gender distribution of hoarding disorder in the overall hoarding disorder population? Is it skewed male, female?
It's something, I mean, there are conflicting studies, but it's something, it's quite balanced up to now. But the problem is that we don't have many really general population studies. It's really difficult to study. And people with hoarding disorder in clinical study, they don't come to the psychiatric office. No one with hoarding disorder. I remember for the first study to find 11 patients with the primary diagnosis of hoarding disorder, it took years. Because we were collecting very slowly and was like people that actually their primary diagnosis were hoarding, but they also had comorbidities, anxiety or mood.
Yes, because most disorder. People will have other things. Most people will have ADHD. A lot of people will have ADHD, in fact.
Sure. And also hoarding, it's something that came out since the childhood and the early adolescence. So it's something probably linked to the neurodevelopmental trajectory too. And that's why probably also an hypothesis there is this comorbidity with ADHD, because probably both are like neurodevelopmental. And as ADHD, everything is neurodevelopmental, people grow up with that disorder and try find their coping strategies to cope with that. So the less severe form, people think it's something, okay, I'm like this, I'm a bit hoarding. It's not a disorder. It's like I am.
Yeah, exactly. Next question, do you think?
Yes. Are you ready? Well, the next question is, what does this mean for people who work with ADHD people? So that can be like clinicians, the people with ADHD's parents,
carers,
anything.
So what are the implications?
What are the implications
for people looking after ADHD people of this study?
All right, that's the following question we are trying to answer too, because actually now we still didn't publish. We are finalizing another study in which we compare the cognitive and clinical phenotype of ADHD patient with comorbid hoarding disorder and without. Okay. Hoarding disorder, because and the data, I mean, still unpublished, we have to do peer review, so I mean, just to discuss, I mean, the point, but what we found is that in general ADHD people with hoarding disorder are more complex phenotypes, so more severe cognitive dysfunction, especially we found in the executive function and attentional problems, and the greater functional impairment. And that was in line with some data, some previous data on ADHD people with hoarding. So it has several implications because it means that ADHD patients with hoarding are more severe, more complex in general. And having hoarding has a negative, it seems that it has a negative impact on the functioning and the quality of life of this patient. So, I mean, I think that the important things of our study is again stress the factor that we have to look to hoarding symptom in ADHD people. It's a simple question that as clinician we have to ask to people. Then what to do with that, how to treat that, it's a huge question. And I, of course, guys, I don't have the answer. but I have my ideas. We can think as my ideas. So it's my opinion. I think that probably there are two roads we have to test. One, it's we need trials, controlled trials, and properly made trials about ADHD medication in the effect of anti-ADHD medication on hoarding symptoms. And we need trial on both patients with hoarding disorder as a primary diagnosis and people with ADHD. Again, we are running a third studies because we are collecting the long-term data about patients treated with methylphenidate. We are like a sample of 50 patients, and we are collecting data of the effect of methylphenidate on this, but it's like a naturalistic study. So we really need trials about that. And this could be one road. So we could discover that maybe treating ADHD with medication, with the proper medication, could also have hoarding. And this could be something important because also for hoarding disorder today, there are no medication indicated. Okay, we don't have studies on the hoarding disorder. We know that probably serotonergic agents don't work properly, and we don't have clear psychotherapeutic treatment that clearly are effective. And the other, on the other hand, we should try to think about psychotherapy or coaching or neuropsychological coaching intervention for this kind of patient. Because if this patient with hoarding have more executive dysfunction, we have maybe to target this executive dysfunction. And we could do it with like coaching, neuropsychological coaching and this kind of approaches.
Yeah. So just to unpack that a little bit, we've talked a few times on this on podcast about executive function, and you've sort of explained it as a kind of planning and organizing, and just I sort of think of it as a getting shit done function, basically. And coaching, although it's not evidence based, is something that's often reached for people who are struggling with their executive function, just to kind of almost to have another person to scaffold their executive function. I think that's often how it works. So just to sort of, does that all sort of make sense with you in terms of what you meant? Mm-hmm. But actually, I was wondering, because it's often, there's a kind of folk understanding that there's something traumatized about hoarders, or there's something that, you know, they can't let go of things because they have something missing in their lives. Is there anything to that scientifically, or is that just a kind of popular myth?
No, it's not popular. I mean, there is some studies showing that people with hoarding probably have much trauma in their early, history respect to controlled patient. But this is also the case for ADHD. And I think there are, and again, I mean, because if we look, we know there are studies showing that early trauma affect the development of attentional networks and executive function networks. And so I think this is really interesting. These are like, there are not many studies about that, but I have the chance to read something about that. And again, probably having a trauma, it's a risk factor for several circuitry that are in common. So if I have a trauma and I have attentional and executive function alteration trajectory because of the trauma, then if I have maybe a genetic predisposition to this compulsive impulsive disorder, maybe I can develop both. So that's why I think that, again, trauma, of course, is something to look to in both, I mean, the population, both in ADHD and hoarding people. Mm.
And, I mean, I think one of the things, just thinking about our listeners, you know, if you are an ADHD person and you're hoarding, it doesn't mean that you are there's some trauma in your life that you're just not acknowledging, or that you're not kind of addressing.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was less that it the trauma could cause the hoarding, but more that, like, if the hoarding already existed but wasn't that noticeable, that it could make it just a lot worse. Is that, would you say that that was relevant?
I think, yeah, that's probably one model. I mean, the model are today that probably trauma can exacerbate. It's something that can exacerbate the disorder. But, I mean, this is a general model, I think, for all the our disorder, that trauma is something that goes where you already have a vulnerability of some way.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also had a question about, because earlier you mentioned that you thought that hoarding was probably caused by people over acquiring things because they like them.
Yeah.
Do you find that that is the case? Mm-hmm. Because I kind of had the impression that sometimes it can happen because of the impulsivity of ADHD and the compulsions of OCD,
absolutely.
Rather than because of you like look at something and you're like, oh, I really like this. You kind of look at it and you go, I have to have this.
So about input, how impulsivity of ADHD people can play a role in this? That's the question. Actually, we found an interesting thing in our new study that it's still unpublished. Unfortunately, I have to speak about unpublished data. It's not so polite, but the difference, when we look to the difference of hoarding symptoms in ADHD patient with clear comorbidity of hoarding and without, we notice that ADHD people that don't have a diagnosis of hoarding differentiate themselves from healthy controls because of excessive acquisition. So excessive acquisition is probably something of ADHD. Right. And it's not something so specific of hoarding disorder.
Just to roll that back for me, for my benefit, if you can have ADHD, even if you don't have hoarding disorder, you're likely to have excessive acquisition as well.
Yeah. Which explains, if you use the scale,
which explains a lot of my behaviors. That's why
we've got two whole cupboards of board games. We've got them in the garage.
We haven't got them in the garage anymore.
Oh, congrats! Yeah.
Very good. So that's yes. I think in general, I mean, it's really, there is a bit of overlap. So the next step, I mean, we really have to look clinically to each patient, because if we just look to excessive acquisition, difficulty in discarding things separate, could be, I think, we don't get to the point for each patient.
Well, there's all kinds of individual things going on here, isn't there? You know, personal background, family history.
Well, there's also the economic thing of, you know, if you have someone in ADHD who's got ADHD in a low-income country, they just may not have the ability, even if they wanted to acquire. Or maybe they're acquiring things that are very different. I mean, it may be the hoarding, you know, think about somebody in India who, for example, who's got hoarding disorder and ADHD, that may look very different. I'm sure they would have the same, in some way, some features, but it would look very different if somebody who hasn't got the income to acquire stuff.
Free things, paper, bills, everything. And also there is the digital hoarding that it's actually, it's not much studied, but it's another things of that clinically I see in patients. I mean, I never did a study about that, but many people tend to hoard on, like, downloading films, movies, series, things. They will never see.
It's a collection. Yes.
Yeah.
When you see people with like 2 million photos in their camera roll, and you're like, why didn't you get rid of something?
That's a really good point, actually. Having sort of not grown up, but lived through the kind of, you know, the downloading boom of, you know, everyone was downloading from Napster or whatever, and various dodgy websites a few years ago, and people would have these ridiculously huge. You know, the one thing you'd have to buy would be a massive external disk drive, and you'd have, you know, 4,000 movies on it, just because you could have 4,000 movies on it. No, because you're never going to watch them.
No.
I have in mind a patient I see a few days ago. It was a young patient, 22, I think. And I text him, and he didn't notice the text. It was like, come 15 minutes for the appointment, something like this. And he said, no, doctor, I didn't see it because my phone is not working, because now it crashed because I'm full of photos, so I don't have any gigahertz, right? It's not working anymore. So And then we discuss about that part. Okay, yes, I make picture of everything, all the dishes I eat, everything. And I cannot discard because I have to choose which one to discard. How can I choose this? Okay, I can make a selection. No? And again, it's I think these are hoarding symptoms.
And the other thing that takes out, because tidying and sorting things is boring. And if you're a person with ADHD, as a person with ADHD, anything which is boring is actively unpleasant and almost painful, almost in a way. I mean, not quite painful, but, you know, so unpleasant that it's aversive. But actually, in a way, it almost strips out some of that. If what you can't get rid of is some photos, but actually doesn't take long to get. It kind of goes to the core of, I just can't get rid of these objects. I just can't.
And also, but if you've got lots of photos because you're over-acquiring them, sometimes it can take ages.
Yeah, that's true, because you have to sift through it all.
Yeah, the longer you leave it, the more photos you get, and then you kind of end up in a spiral.
So it is quite similar. You've still got this very boring thing of sifting through that you have to do.
I did wonder, because you mentioned the low-income thing, which I thought was really interesting, but I wanted to look at it, like, still in, like, the Western society, but the differences between someone who's very like well off and someone who is in a low income household, just even in the UK, would look very different. Because if you're in a low income household and you have all this stuff and you want to get rid of it, you might have that extra feeling of I'm losing out on this. Like you're losing. But if you're like really well off, you'll be because you can just get it again. If you throw it away, you can just get it again.
Yeah, that's true. And also the other thing is if you've got a big enough house, you can hoard all you like. I mean, you know, to an extent, we're privileged. But
I mean, yeah, it goes in both directions, doesn't it?
My excessive buying of board games has not actually caused us not to be able to have dinner because I don't have to pile them up on the burnt dining room table, for example.
But I'm thinking to these two cases because I see in my experience both a low-income patient and a high-income patient. And the high-income patient, I remember, he bought like several garages that in Florence are quite expensive. We live in Florence, okay? Buying a garage is like buying a big cow. I mean, because parking for car is more important than living in a house in Florence. And so he was buying like several garages, like three or four. And still, since he bought another one, he said, okay, I can collect other things because now I have a new garage. So actually the disorder was like worsening. So, but of course, it's a
double impact, isn't it? Because you can acquire more, but it causes you less. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, it's all very individual, but you can with more money, you can acquire more, but it also does you less damage to not get rid of it.
That's true.
Yeah, that's I think a good point because actually, if you the hygienic problem, hygiene in a small house with a lot of boarding, it's much big problem. If you have three, four garage, of course, that's a good point.
On a low income, is much more of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it can go in either direction. I imagine, right?
Yeah. Interesting, really interesting, kind of. In mixing up the socioeconomic and the neuropsychological.
I take sociology and psychology, so this is what I do.
This is how you roll. Okay, nice.
Well, that's a good tip. We will look to that.
My other thinking is if you're a clinician and you're looking at somebody, and it sort of goes back to the point that Tess made, is if you've got somebody who's got hoarding problems. And I'm thinking more of a primary care person, maybe not get to a psychiatrist. Someone who's got some difficulty with hoarding may actually just in the UK go to a GP. If you're in that situation, maybe a GP should think about ADHD as a possible background condition for somebody who's having problems with hoarding. I think that probably is quite an important implication because, like you said, Tess, there probably are people out there, particularly in the UK, at least women, who are not being picked up and their hoarding is being put down to whatever else, whereas in fact it's a symptom of ADHD.
No, I don't know if it's in the UK, but in Italy, I mean, thinking about ADHD in this, I mean, we have, I think the DGP have to take in mind about neurodevelopmental disorder goes together. So if you really see someone with hoarding, OCD and this, think also about ADHD. Yeah, because really they are co-linked. Yeah.
But that's a message that's going to take years to get through to everyone in the field. And that's one of the things that I suppose we're trying to do our little bit to kind of raise awareness of. At ADHD UK, the UK ADHD charity.
Woo!
Yeah.
Bravi, bravi.
Should we go on to our next question?
Yes. So what does this mean for ADHD people themselves? Like, what can we do?
Yeah, what can we do as ADHD people?
Actually, I think the treatment it's used for, the CBT treatment, it's used for ordering disorder. It's tried to gradually expose to discarding things. So one thing that an ADHD person could be is start trying to organize and to start from the less things to make a graduation of the things they think they have less value and try to discard them. I mean, step by step. It's like a progressive exposure. That's similar to what we do in OCD spectrum.
Getting
OCD
rid of little things.
Treatments.
And I think it's really important that we talk about value. And I kind of implicitly say, you've mentioned this before, but I want to bring it out to the fore. We're not just talking about financial value here. We're also talking about emotional value. And that is another, valid. That's a valid kind of value. Sentimental value.
A shirt you've had since you were five. You know, you don't fit in it anymore, but it's still there.
Yes, it's still there.
And you're like, maybe I can make a pillow out of this, but you're never going to.
No, maybe, yes. Craft is a great one, isn't it? Because you can always make something, but you never do.
I know. The amount of unfinished projects that I see some people acquiring, you know, they've got, they've started a knitting. Hey, stop.
Yes, no, that's true. I mean, it's a very common life experience, and I suppose it's more common in ADHD people, but probably there's lots of people listening who don't have ADHD who may have a bit of a bit of a hoarding tendency, and maybe this advice is probably useful for all of them as well.
But there has to be a big difference between like symptoms of hoarding and hoarding tendencies, which I assume are common in like a lot of people with ADHD, an actual like hoarding disorder.
Yes, of course. Absolutely. Yes, exactly.
And it's just, I don't know, where does that line fall? Because I know you mentioned it's when it starts to obstruct their, like their every, like what you need to do to like their basic functions, essentially.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good start, isn't it? And in terms of drawing that line.
Yes, it's well, when you have struggling and functioning, but also when you are, when these things are distressing you, because actually the difference from, think about the collectionist, someone that it's really egocentrics having things, and even if you're not cluttered, and the hoarding people, when it's a disorder, it's like something that it's distressing you also on an emotional side, not just the functional. I mean, not just the function. It's okay, I have to discard, but I cannot. Okay, it's something also that in some way it's distressed. It's what hoarding patient says. And that's one of the part that differentiates it from collection. It's not that if you look to
Their own inability to not discard things is causing them directly distress. Them, not other people.
It's
I think that's really important. That's a really important distinction.
And yes, of course. It's the big difference. And then the difference from people that do like professional collectionists, those people that really that love collection, hard collection, and things collection. If you look like in a superficial way, they looks like big orders, but everything is egocentric. The acquisition is egocentric. Everything
Can
is
we
really.
Just go back to that word, which is a tremendous word. I think I know what it means. Egocentric.
Yeah, it's something that you do in a pleasurable way. It's not something that it's like perceived that's negative or unpleasant to your brain. It's like a thought of things that you do in a pleasurable way. And that's the big difference for example, if I'm obsessed by a person or I love a person. You have the thoughts of that person, always the thought in your mind. But if you love that person, if you fall in love with the person, it's something pleasurable. So we say it's egocentric. If you have the idea of that person, it's something bad for you, or if you see that person, something bad will happen, it's more egodystonic and it's more an obsession. So that's
Heliocentric is my new favourite word. Well, I don't know. I think I'm going to say ego because it makes sense to me.
I'm going to say ego because I like
it. Well, I also really like eggs, so.
I don't even like eggs.
Okay, wow. Our vocabulary has been enriched.
Yeah.
And we've learned a lot about hoarding.
When you come into contact with hoarding patients, do you find that the hoarding tends to manifest most in clothing, like leftovers in the fridge, collections? What kind of things do people tend to hoard the most?
It's very a lot. In my experience, it's very, really a lot. Clothes, of course. That's a good point. Now I'm thinking about that. I see difference according to the economic income. Okay. No? So people with higher economic income include clothing, things they bought, things, stuff, unusable things. And I have in mind severe hoarding patient with less income that taking things from the trash in the streets, like bad clothes or clothes that are thrown away, or I have in mind also people collecting pens, no? The finished pens, no? Like when the pen is not finished, maybe you can write just a few lines. And I remember a patient who has like 2,000, 3,000 empty pens. And it was collecting all the empty pens. Almost empty, no? Because when I was challenging with him, no, and saying, okay, but they're empty. You cannot, no, doctor, they're not empty. I can still write some words with which one. But you use them? No, I don't use. I have too much. I have the new pen, so I don't mind about this. I want to store this for the future, no? That's challenge.
Should we do our last question?
Yes. So what is your next question? What are you planning to look into next?
My big question is what we can do pharmacologically for this patient, and will methylphenidate or stimulants in general can help hoarding? I have my clinical impression, but still, when we will look to data, we will have something. And then hopefully, I hope to publish this data and to stress people that can do proper trial to do this trial.
And it would be a real help because it sounds like, because if you've got, you know, 30% of ADHD patients will have a degree of, will have a diagnosable hoarding disorder.
Yes.
That's huge. If we extrapolate your data, that's a huge number of people, given that ADHD is so is actually really common, who could potentially be helped.
Again, probably the frequency, if we look to a clinical diagnosis, maybe it will be something less, but it's still something between 20 and 30, and the stress that we have to look toward the ADHD people. I think that's really the take-home message.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I think we can leave it there, don't you, Tess? I think I've...
I did have one more question.
Yeah, go for it.
A lot of the people who we have on the podcast are from the UK, so I don't really tend to think about this as much, but because you're from Italy, do you think that there is a big cultural difference in this?
Good question. That is something we have to look in the future. Maybe someone will have to compare our data with something doing the same in the UK. Actually, our study, the only other study about hoarding in ADHD was made in the UK by the Moran Zamir group. So, and we have similar results.
Probably
so,
not.
At least for the prevalence, it's probably not. But then for the clinical phenotypes and feature, we have to look more deeply.
You mentioned about what it would look like for somebody in India, and you mentioned that the way that people are, like the time that people are diagnosed is very different in Italy. And I just thought maybe...
Yeah. I mean, I think it probably
That's a big question. It would be very difficult to answer. So there's, you know...
Something to return to, another day.
Another day with a very big team.
Absolutely right. We're doing a global hoarding ADHD.
I'll just call up everyone with ADHD all around the world. I've got all their phone numbers.
Have you?
Yeah. When you get diagnosed with ADHD, even when you're not diagnosed, I just get a little notification on my phone.
Ah.
Yeah. Can't get rid of the patients though.
Well, that's because your phone's not really working properly.
No.
No. All right. Thank you very, very much for joining us. Good. It's been extremely educational and useful.
Thank you.
Thank you to you. It's been a pleasure to be invited to be here.
Thank you very much. And bye-bye. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye bye.
Right, so that was Giacomo.
Who, of course, was talking about hoarding. Hoarding,
yes. I know I like to hammer home the message. The copy, link to, not a copy, because we can't post a copy, because we can't post you a copy, because we haven't got enough stamps.
I also don't have your address.
Yeah, we will post a link to Giacomo's paper on in the show notes, as well as any social media that he is happy to share. And so you can look, find out for yourself. If the events and issues covered in this podcast have affected you in any way, which they may have done, please just
especially
comment.
Especially if it's positive. Please let us know if it's positive.
Please, please do let us know. Go to the ADHD UK website. We've got lots and lots of Facebook groups where we're posting this. Anything on ADHD UK, you can leave us a comment. We will read all the comments. We will take them on board if you want us to make things better. But yes, in the meantime...
In the meantime, Merry Christmas. If you don't celebrate Christmas, happy holidays. Enjoy the break.
We may well have another episode for Christmas. But
okay,
anyway.
Well, we'll see you then. See you then. He doesn't tell me these things.
It's always never a bad idea to wish people a Merry Christmas.
I wish you a Merry Christmas no matter when you're listening to this.
Yes, very good point. All right, bye.
Bye.